Streaming on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving.
ABC News, I'm Jacqueline Lee. Heavy smoke from Canada wildfires drifting into the U.S., leading to air quality alerts across 13 states. In New York City, Mayor Eric Adams urging people to stay indoors.
This is an unprecedented event in our city, and New Yorkers must take precaution.
ABC's chief meteorologist Ginger Z says smoke will linger for days.
We spoke with NASA scientists who said that EPA has been tracking this type of air quality from smoke from wildfires since 1999. This will likely rival and probably surpass the worst, which was back in 2002.
In Richmond, Virginia, police say a 19-year-old is in custody following last night's deadly shooting spree outside a graduation ceremony. A father and son were killed. Five others were injured. Former Vice President Mike Pence entering the crowded GOP presidential race. It comes a day after Chris Christie launched his campaign. 86-year-old Pope Francis is in the hospital for surgery to fix a hernia. This is ABC News. Prince Harry has concluded his testimony in a London courtroom. He's part of a lawsuit against the Mirror Group, a cluster of British tabloids accused of obtaining information through illegal means like phone hacking. On Capitol Hill, there's bipartisan support over what drivers will find to their next new car or truck. Here's ABC's Jim Ryan.
The AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act would require automakers to keep putting AM receivers in new vehicles at no additional charge. It's created an unlikely alliance of lawmakers as ideologically distant as Democrat Ed Markey of Massachusetts and Republican Ted Cruz of Texas. Markey says his constituents need AM as a source of information in crises. Cruz says doing away with AM would stifle conservative talk radio.
Instagram may soon have its own AI chatbot. Reports say testing is underway for the new feature, allowing users to get answers and advice from the chatbot in their direct messages. Jacqueline Lee, ABC News.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Relief may be soon on the way for people in Wisconsin waiting a long time for their professional licenses. The State Assembly today is set to pass a package of bills to speed up the process for everyone from tattoo artists to doctors and nurses. One bill would double the length of time some licenses would need to be renewed from 2 years to 4 years. Another bill would let people like accountants waiting for business licenses to work right away if they have a valid license from another state. All of today's bills were supported in committee by Republicans and opposed by Democrats. Meanwhile, the state Senate today is expected to give final approval to five Republican bills designed to tighten up Wisconsin's unemployment system. Stuart Waddles has more.
People getting unemployment in Wisconsin already have to look for work 4 times a week. One of the bills today would let employers report people who decline an interview or don't show up. Repeat offenders could lose their unemployment payments. Voters in a statewide referendum last fall indicated they want able-bodied adults getting unemployment to have to look for work. Another bill would lead to stricter identity verification checks to get unemployment. Business groups support the bill while labor unions oppose them. Governor Evers has vetoed similar bills before and says he will again. I'm Stuart J. Waddles for Civic Media News.
Attorney General Josh Call is asking Wisconsin lawmakers for more money to add to the staff of the state crime lab. He's asking for about $2.3 million in the next state budget.
The justice system is exactly that. It's a system. And making sure that each of the component parts of the system are funded helps ensure that justice can happen efficiently and that our communities are kept as safe as possible.
Call's opponent in the last election agrees. Fond du Lac County DA Eric Toney says a better staffed Justice Department would make for a safer Wisconsin.
There's no doubt that the crime labs in Wisconsin are critical to public safety. As a prosecutor, we use those resources across the state, and everything from a first offense drunk driving to intentional homicides to drug overdoses.
The Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee is set to take up the Justice Department budget tomorrow. The end of the COVID-era Title 42 immigration policy does not seem to be leading to a new influx of immigrants in the upper Midwest. Title 42 allowed for immigrants to be immediately expelled if they got into the United States illegally. Jody Maschek of Iowa Migrant Movement for Justice says immigrants have simply returned to pre-pandemic methods for seeking asylum.
People who are allowed to enter the country and pursue an asylum claim, if they're not otherwise detained by the Immigration Service, then if they know a friend or family member that they can reach out to stay with, then that's how they wind up going to all these different states.
Maschek says post-Title 42 immigration policy means a return to rules she considers outdated and unfair. Humanitarian advocates say they hope a new federal plan to curb atrocities around the world will help people abroad and here at home. Mike Moan reports.
This spring, the Biden administration laid out specific strategies under the Global Fragility Act approved in 2019 with bipartisan support. It focuses on preventing some of the underlying drivers of conflict like genocide or ethnic violence. Felicity Gray of the group Nonviolent Peace Force says people are well informed about the direct impacts of the war in Ukraine, but other conflicts have their reach too.
Whether it's on the security front or whether it's how much you're paying to fill up your car. So by being really proactive about stabilization and conflict prevention, we can hopefully save a lot of money and a lot of heartache for communities around the world as well.
Foreign policy experts say this should allow the U.S. to be less reactive.
Your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. Summer days don't get much better than this. A high-pressure system is slowly sliding over Wisconsin today, which cleared the clouds and is making way for a bright and beautiful day. Temperatures will range hotter to the west and cooler by the lakes. Highs will be flirting with the 80s by the Mississippi Valley, and with winds off the Great Lakes, towns near Lake Michigan will only hit highs in the upper 60s, and it will be even cooler along the shores of Lake Superior, with highs in the upper 50s. Tonight, clear skies will allow temperatures to drop chilly to the upper 30s and low 40s in the Northwoods, and hover into the low 50s for the rest of the state, giving most of us a perfect night to open those windows. What do you say we just put this picture-perfect day on repeat for tomorrow, eh? Have a wonderful Wednesday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Brewers win a thriller in extra innings. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Bottom of the 10th, two outs, Milwaukee's Joey Weimer at the plate.
Down left field line! It's over! Joey Weimer with two strikes wins it in the 10th. Another game winner for the crew.
Jeff Levering on Bally Sports. The final 4-3 in favor of the Brewers over the Orioles. Bryce Turang, key RBI in the 8th to tie it up. Weimer with his first walk-off game-winning hit off of Yennier Cano in the 10th. Craig Counsell.
You know, two big hits. You know, Cano's been lights out this year. So that was, to score against him. Not many people have scored. I'd probably give him three runs this year. So to push a run across him and Bryce to have a good at-bat and a huge hit, obviously really impactful. And then Joey picked us up, you know, with a big hit in the 10th.
The two teams meet again tonight at AmFam Field. NFL, Packers OTAs in Green Bay. Jordan Love on throwing an interception during a game simulation in the final 2 minutes says, well, now's the time to try things out.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is the time to kind of push those boundaries, try things, and kind of just see and learn. Great play by him. Good to go back, watch it on film, see when I could have maybe got the ball out sooner. I think I had an option right there on the sideline. You know, it's a learning situation. Maybe hit him, get out of the balance, get some yards, and be able to finish that two-minute drive maybe with a score. So it's all learning right now. This is a great time to be able to, kind of push those boundaries.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, I think it's a great learning experience, and you'd rather have that happen in practice than out in a game. And certainly there's going to be those moments, but it is for every quarterback. And it's certainly, I think, when you talk about the situation, you're talking about a two-minute end of game, no timeouts. Sometimes you're a little bit more aggressive, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And so I think you just have to go through those experiences and try to learn from them and get better from them, both when they're good and obviously when they're bad.
More practices today in Green Bay. NBA, the Bucks introducing their new head coach, Adrian Griffin. The Bucks GM, John Horst, was impressed how Griffin analyzed and broke down game tape during the interview process.
His passion and his energy when it comes to coaching is evident. You can just, the rhythm in which he answered your question, like that's who he is. This guy's a basketball coach.
John, Adrian, WRJN Radio and Civic Media. So the next step is the staff around him. What have you envisioned, Adrian, about what it takes to be, your assistant and the guys around you as you build this program?
Mike, well, I think I touched on it, just the three C's that I'm looking for, the high character guys, highly competent, and being creative, thinking a little bit out of the box. The smart thing is to surround myself with coaches who complement my leadership style.
The 48-year-old Griffin becomes the 17th head coach in franchise history. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hey guys, this is Sage from Civic Media. Are you a small business struggling to get the word out? 1260 AM Lake Air is here to help. For a limited time, apply for a $200 grant and receive $1,000 worth of free advertising. Your $200 investment becomes $1,200 with this grant. That's right, you heard correctly. Get your business notice without breaking the bank. Visit civicmedia.us or call 608-949-8989. That's 608-949-8989 for more information. Don't miss out on this amazing opportunity.
The enticing smell of fresh baked goods, breads, rolls, pies, cookies, and more. This isn't just a bakery. It's Just Dane's Just Bakery, a training program for people dealing with employment barriers. Learn more and order now for your next get-together at justdane.org. justdane.org.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Hey folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. We've had 5 or 6 beers and only one fish.
Here's your updated forecast. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 76. East winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, lows around 50. A mix of clouds and sun again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 76. Upper 70s Friday with a chance for scattered thunderstorms. Turning cooler Saturday with highs in the mid-70s. Chance for storms continues. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM. Right now, 72.
Hey guys, this is Sage from Civic Media. Are you a small business struggling to get the word out? 1260 AM Lake Air is here to help. For a limited time, apply for a $200 grant and receive $1,000.
Welcome all, this is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. Here, you are the star, you are the talent, and you will be driving the talking points of the day. I'm William Walter, you might remember me from Wednesdays with Will. I am the Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer at Our Wisconsin Revolution, and I am so excited to be with you today. On this lovely Wednesday afternoon. I'm joined by Luke Mathers. Luke, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Will. Jeez, that's a hard one to say on a Wednesday.
Say that 3 times.
Yeah, first. You got a tongue twister there. It's a glorious Wednesday here in the state of Wisconsin. We're having a fun time, and we are going to dive into the phone calls and the questions for those phone callers.
We got Aaron on the board today, too. Aaron, how are you?
Doing pretty well. Starting to get into the groove of the new schedule.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit of an adjustment, but we're here for it. We're ready to go. We love that midday afternoon roundtable discussion. So, question I want to pose today is on school board, school districts in the state of Wisconsin. What are we going to allow school districts to do from a free speech perspective? Reading from an article at JS Online, Arrowhead is considering banning signs promoting safe spaces and other things that create diversion. The proposal would prohibit, quote, flags of any kind, unquote, with the exception of the American flag, the Wisconsin state flag, and flags specific to a foreign language being taught in the room. It would also forbid, quote, race dividing, unquote, signs such as Black Lives Matter or anything denoting one specific race, as well as anti-racist classroom notations, rainbows, or any signage of any type promoting a sexual or gender preference, political signage promoting one party or candidate over another. Now, this policy does not include student attire or student-owned items or vehicles, as long as the clothing does not conflict with the school's dress code under the proposal. Now, we have been discussing quite a bit over the past few months First Amendment protected freedom of speech. Where do we draw the lines within school districts? I want to hear your thoughts. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. If you would like to contribute to the conversation, I have Dan from Cedarburg on the line right now. Dan, what do you think about this new proposal from Arrowhead?
Thanks for having me on. I think this Arrowhead situation, we've seen other school districts, especially here in Southeast Wisconsin, engaging in similar conduct to try to chill students' free speech. And I think it's part of a broader assault that we're seeing, not just locally, but across the country on our children's ability to have the freedom to think, the freedom to speak, and also the freedom to be who they are. I think local control is desirable where that is possible, but in situations like this where you have a policy that apparently seems quite overly broad and also may allow for, since you mentioned the garb, what I'm thinking of specifically is, so if a kid came in with a anti-Joe Biden or pro-Donald Trump t-shirt, that would be permissible, but we're not going to allow students to show, to have a flag or some other kind of insignia. It's a very dangerous situation because I think we should be encouraging students, encouraging our kids to think critically, have these conversations. I mean, that's the foundation of democracy. And, you know, it's very disturbing that we continue to see these efforts, not just by school boards, but also by state legislators like we've seen in Florida, to try to basically make it so that students don't feel like they can be who they are or be able to speak freely. It's definitely something that should concern everybody.
That's a really good point, Dan. They're trying to force everybody to fall under the same ideological umbrella that they kind of want students marching under. I will note that Arrowhead School Board Vice President Chris Ferris is the one who brought the idea to the board's policy committee. So this was done internally. And I think you made another very interesting point, Dan, on where, you know, it's interesting that they specifically noted that clothing, student attire, or student-owned items are not under this proposal. To give you a direct example, that's something that has happened in my school district, where students have worn shirts that, you know, the FJB type shirts, and that has been allowed, that has been accepted. But now they would draw the line here at any type of, you know, race dividing signs or anti rainbows or any signage of any type promoting a sexual or gender preference. That is unacceptable as long as it's not the individual student doing it. I think that they're trying to, like you said, have it as wide reaching as possible so that they can pick and choose when to apply this rule.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's so interesting that it specifically targeted race and LGBTQ rights, because, I mean, this is within a broader discussion and really policymaking agenda we're seeing across the country to try to attack LGBTQ students. And it not only has an effect on students, but it also has an effect on educators being willing to teach in these districts. I mean, if this district is entertaining something like this dealing with students, I don't think it's a stretch to imagine that similar policies will be created to try to control and dictate what educators are doing in the classroom. And that will create further issues and limit our children's ability to have the freedom to learn in the classroom.
I think another interesting note is that as the article points out, specifying safe zones for some and signs promoting one group over others, quote, can create a feeling of isolation, division, and estrangement, unquote, the proposal says. Now, that to me just reads as, I hate to say it, but that's the same narrative we're seeing at the national level with a lot of the culture war driven issues that certain conservative elected officials are trying to drive. They are saying that, you know, at one point they say college campuses are safe spaces for snowflakes to come and live in an echo chamber where they don't have to be challenged ideologically by anything that disagrees with them because they're so uncomfortable with a differing opinion. But then at the same point, they're now trying to use that same type of language that they accuse college students on the left of doing within our own high schools. So they're doing the exact same thing, but trying to reach the students even younger and younger. Is this just projection, or am I misreading this situation?
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of just safe spaces from safe spaces is what's needed, I guess. Because it's a weird mindset to say that by putting a sign on because really this doesn't, it doesn't come down to a whole lot of free speech for students, it feels like. It comes down to free speech for teachers. For teachers to be able to say, this classroom is a safe space if you need it. If they go even as far as saying that, according to this proposal, that would be banned. And so for a teacher to be able to say that this is a safe space and somebody to come forward and say, well, that indicates that there's other not safe spaces around the high school and that these administrators are not going and saying, well, maybe why was this safe space needed? Maybe there are not safe spaces for different demographic groups in the high school. And this teacher had to go out of their way to indicate to their students that this is a safe space. Wouldn't you want to go find out why that safe space was necessary rather than saying, well, we're going to ban all safe spaces because that would indicate that there are other non-safe spaces? No?
Dan, what do you think about?
Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. You know, it's so many conversations I've had with students throughout throughout Southeast Wisconsin through my community organizing. Students are absolutely need these safe spaces because of conduct that they're both witnessing and, frankly, in a lot of cases, experiencing at the hands of other students. And I think, you know, there's a lot of room to grow, and there needs to be a larger conversation, I think, not just in our local communities, but in the state about the treatment of LGBTQ students, of students of color, and especially in a lot of the communities. I mean, I live in a suburban community, so these issues are very prevalent out here, but it's not just limited to our suburban areas, but this happens all across the state. And districts are legally supposed to be looking into this, but I think also morally and ethically it should be talking to these students and doing a much better job of making sure that everyone feels welcome and that they're able to thrive in the educational environment that they're in.
Thanks, Dan. Dan, stick around for a little bit. We got a few more questions for you. This is Town Call with William Walter and Luke Mathers. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, where do we draw the line for free speech in public schools? Please give us a call, 844-967-2789. I want to touch on, Dan, something that Luke just mentioned that I didn't even consider when I was reading the article is, and I think, Luke, that was a very brilliant point, is it specifically appears that these type of policies are targeting teachers in the sense that I have seen on social media, I have seen on Fox News broadcasts, they will go after the stereotypical teacher who might have, we accept everyone in this classroom type flags. Those are where they draw the line because they don't want this teacher to be essentially advertising that the rest of our school is uncomfortable. It makes the rest of our school look bad. It paints the district in a poor light that we have some areas in the school that's unacceptable. Do you think this might be contributing to some of the massive teacher shortages we're seeing in southeastern Wisconsin?
Absolutely. It's part of a larger, between that and policies that are being enacted to, I don't even say critically analyze curriculum and textbooks, but to basically intimidate teachers in the teaching things, especially social studies and history, in a way that is acceptable and to a certain audience, but isn't necessarily the real history of our country. It's absolutely making it harder for us to retain teachers. And I think it, in a broader sense, it's part of a larger problem that we've had in the state, not just over the last couple of years, but I mean, this has been ongoing for a decade now, where people are refusing to go into the education profession partly because of the culture in which educators are treated. And stuff like this exacerbates that. And I think, you know, we have to really look at why it is that we're failing to attract and retain our best educators and educational staff. It absolutely is a reason, having talked to educators out there through my work, it absolutely is a reason why educators are leaving for other districts or moving out of state in some cases.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'd like to note as well that the article notes the rationale for this policy, according to Arrowhead School Board Vice President Chris Ferris, was to create an environment that is an opportunity that is available similar for all students. I know it can't be exactly the same, but that there's no preference being shown to any one group or race or ethnicity or gender. It's really all about transparency with families. That's really where our focus is globally. I feel like this falls into those parameters. It sounds like a cop-out. It sounds like he's capitulating to a couple of frustrated, upset, maybe more aggressive parents who are following the culture war issues at the national level and don't want that stuff brought into their classroom. So rather than protecting the students of his district, he is just going to protect a small handful of overly loud and otherwise disinterested parents. So we're going to be right back after the break. This is Town Call with William and Luke. We're talking where the First Amendment is allowed in public schools. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll see you right after the break.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Jacqueline Lee. Heavy smoke from Canada wildfires drifting into the U.S., leading to air quality alerts across 13 states. In New York City, Mayor Eric Adams urging people to stay indoors.
This is an unprecedented event in our city,
and New Yorkers must take precaution.
ABC's chief meteorologist Ginger Z says smoke will linger for days.
We spoke with NASA scientists who said that EPA has been tracking this type of air quality from smoke from wildfires since 1999. This will likely rival and probably surpass the worst, which was back in 2002.
In Richmond, Virginia, police say a 19-year-old is in custody following last night's deadly shooting spree outside a graduation ceremony. A father and son were killed. Five others were injured. Former Vice President Mike Pence entering the crowded GOP presidential race. It comes a day after Chris Christie launched his campaign. 86-year-old Pope Francis is in the hospital for surgery to fix a hernia. This is ABC News.
Oh my gosh, it's more fun than a big block of Colby or cheddar. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Here's what you need to know in Western Wisconsin. I'm Jimmy Cuska. Leaders in La Crosse are proposing a multi-year plan to address homelessness in the county. During a presentation on Tuesday, officials said homelessness is costing the community about $3.3 million per year. One of the major issues, shelters are full in La Crosse. The plan includes ongoing collaboration between different levels of government to find solutions. The Pepin County Sheriff's Office seized almost 90 dogs from a breeder in western Wisconsin due to unsanitary conditions. The ASPCA said some of the dogs, including puppies and pregnant dogs, needed medical care. All of the dogs were relocated to a recovery center. And the reason Chippewa Falls public outdoor pool isn't opening on time? A burst pipe. That's according to WQOW-TV, which said that the city's Parks and Rec director told them that crews were already working on making repairs. Earlier this week, the city said the pool wouldn't open on June 9th as originally scheduled. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, ThriveFund has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thereichman.com/disclosure.
If you're grilling this weekend, be sure to have plenty of Village Hearth buns on hand. Fancy equipment and secret sauces are great, but once you've mastered the basics, it's all about the bun. Your perfectly grilled burgers and hot dogs deserve the best, and with several varieties to choose from, including unsliced old-fashioned, classic white or wheat, country potato, and mini sliders, the bakers of Village Hearth have the buns your family will love. Village Hearth buns, locally baked and delivered fresh daily.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media Radio station and on the app.
We've all felt left out, and for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome all. We are back with Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star. This is William Walter, joined by Luke Mathers, and today we're talking freedom of speech in public schools. Where do we draw the line? What is and is not acceptable? Continuing the conversation we had before the break, this is not the first district, referring, of course, to Arrowhead, that has implemented a policy of this kind. In 2021, the Waukesha School District banned Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, Thin Blue Line, anti-racist, and other posters and materials from district classrooms under its policy on controversial issues in classrooms. And the Kettle Moraine School District added a ban on political and religious messaging, including pride flags, in July of 2022. It also banned pronouns, ironic for a school that would be teaching how to put sentences together properly, political language and religious views from staff emails and signatures. I have Dan on the line from Cedarburg. Dan, I know that you're in the area, obviously, southeastern Wisconsin. Is this something that you have witnessed in the schools in your community that might or may similar type of policies being implemented but hasn't received the same kind of coverage?
Absolutely. Some people, some of your listeners might be familiar. Cedarburg actually went through a similar issue with this about 2 years ago. Back in the summer of 2021, our school district, the school board leadership had essentially changed through the appointment process. And one of their first actions that summer in a closed session was to have a Love is Universal mural that was painted by the students at the Webster Middle School destroyed. And subsequently, I've heard from folks in the district that of like difficulties with students feeling like they can freely express themselves, especially LGBTQ students. I also know that there was an instance of a teacher being questioned about having a Love is Universal mural mug in their classroom to potentially indicate that, hey, this might be a safe place for somebody to approach. But I mean, even past the safe place part of this, like, you would think that these kinds of items would be used as a point of discussion about what's actually happening. You know, when I was younger, one of the most captivating classes I had in my K-12 was through a teacher using real examples and real things that were being discussed and going on in the world at that time to reflect on the material that we were going through. And I think we're really losing out on having these kinds of discussions and getting students to think critically and put themselves in somebody else's shoes when we're like, well, we can't talk about this or like these particular kinds of issues, because I mean, this is very prominent and it's becoming an even bigger issue because of what not just school districts are doing, but what states are doing to try to affect how our students can learn in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. You're teaching conformity rather than critical thought, which is really hampering someone's ability to flourish. We have Andrea from Menominee Falls also on the line. Andrea, there's something you'd like to contribute?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind immediately when I think about getting teachers in trouble for talking about things as simple as sexuality, religion, I think looking at what the goal of this is to, and I think it was said earlier before I came on, that it's a method to scare them into a position where they have to choose between being able to support themselves economically, keeping their jobs, paying off student loans, and having to choose between keeping their job versus sticking to their morals and providing a quality education to students. And I think it's really important that we look at what they're trying to do. And then, you know, I think taking it a step further, the other side of this is the people that want to push for these bans on books and ban free speech, they want to scare children into being in the same position where, you know, we don't talk about religion, we don't talk about sexuality. It's this taboo topic. And I think it's just another method to keep people quiet, keep people afraid, and just continue this cycle so that we dumb things down in a way that people can't develop into flourishing human beings with different ideas.
Forced compliance. That's a brilliant point, Andrea. I couldn't agree with that more. When the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, pressure that is being put on these teachers by administrators that, you know, boy, it would be a problem. It'd be a big bummer if you lost your job and couldn't afford to pay your rent. Guess you better do what we have to say. Wink. Like, what kind of a message are you sending to your students that you either do what we say or you're unable to you know, advance in your career, you're unable to provide for your family? If you have anything you'd like to contribute to the show, please give us a call, 844-967-2789. We're talking First Amendment free speech in public schools. Where do we draw the line? The examples that we've been using is in reference to Arrowhead considering banning signs promoting safe spaces and other things that could create diversion. But Dan and Andrea, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this as well. An article from the AP posted this morning, Wisconsin's GOP-led legislature to block meningitis vaccine requirement for students. The Republican-controlled Wisconsin legislature plans to take the final step needed to stop Democratic Governor Tony Evers' administration from requiring seventh graders be vaccinated against meningitis. It appears school districts are now taking that next step past free speech into medical requirements, something that has been required for years. If you want to be at a public school, you have to be vaccinated against meningitis. And now the Republican-controlled legislature seems to be going a different route. Andrea, do you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, the first thing that comes to mind is I don't think people understand that, although, yes, there's an inherent risk with any medical procedure, yes, and those are disclosed when you are going through that medical procedure, such as a vaccine. This information can be accessed easily online through reputable resources such as the CDC website. What people don't consider is the long-term effects and treatments and therapy and potential for other complications, especially at such an impressionable age as, you know, being in seventh grade. And I really encourage people to think about what comes with contracting meningitis, because it's not just a quick antibiotic and back to school. It's a really, really laborious process to get back on your feet.
Mm-hmm. Meningitis is an infection of the brain and spinal cord that can also cause blood infections. It can be deadly or cause lifelong disability, though rates of the disease have declined exponentially in the United States since the 1990s and remain very low both in Wisconsin and across the country, according to the CDC, which is likely due to the vaccines for both meningitis and chickenpox being widely used and being proven to be safe and effective. If you'd like to be like Dan or Andrea and contribute to the show today, please give us a call, 844-967-2789. Dan, what are your thoughts on the potential GOP-led legislature's effort to block meningitis vaccine requirements for students?
Well, it on the surface seems nonsensical. I mean, these mandates exist. I mean, we should be listening to public health officials and medical experts first and foremost when it comes to these kinds of decisions. These vaccines have been very helpful in preventing serious illness. I mean, as was just referenced a little while ago, meningitis not only can be very serious and cause death while you have it, but it can cause serious long-term health consequences as well. And it's particularly prevalent, it seems, I'm not sure I know this for a fact, but it seems like it is more common in younger people when you hear about these outbreaks. Like, I remember back in the day hearing about these at college campuses, for example. We should be focused on trying to prevent, like, these are preventable diseases. And if these vaccines significantly, you know, help students from contracting things that may cause endanger them in the short term and also potentially cause long-term issues if they were to contract that illness. I mean, it seems like common sense that you would mandate that. I mean, I understand that there may be some vaccines that the, you know, risk reward of mandating it may not be as significant or needed, but this just seems like a bizarre act from the legislature. Have they given an explanation as to why they're entertaining doing this?
I am not seeing one. My guess would be that it is perhaps, as you just noted with other vaccine requirements, perhaps it's a proxy war for another hotly debated vaccine discussion that we are seeing at the national level right now. Do you know of any other viruses that we're seeing have potential long-term side effects even after contracting it, you know, with debilitating issues potentially years and years into the future? Now, that vaccine has not been studied nearly as much as meningitis, which has been used for years and years and years. So that is the argument I think that those opposed to mandating the vaccine would make. However, again, meningitis has been available for years, has been required for years. This has been studied extensively. What are the two of your thoughts on potentially if this might be expanding the debate that they want to have on vaccine requirements as a whole and are just using meningitis as kind of a a shield to not have to refer to the current pandemic, which is, of course, still COVID.
Well, I'll say I think that the idea is you don't really hear of a whole lot of people getting meningitis, measles, mumps, rubella. Obviously, that's because it's been long eradicated. You see a couple cases of measles here and there a little bit more commonly because people are increasingly refusing vaccines. But I think it's a really convenient vaccine to use to say, well, if we eradicate this one and or if we inspire people to not get this vaccine, take away the legal requirements and nobody gets it because it's long been gone, we can say, well, this isn't necessary. They're just trying to turn you all into sheep. They're just trying to force you all to do something you don't need to do. So just to reiterate, I think it's just a really convenient vaccine to use.
They're scapegoating meningitis. Well, if it's not a problem now, why do we have to get vaccinated against it? Ignoring, of course, the fact that it's not a problem now because virtually everyone has been vaccinated against it. Dan, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's clear that this seems to be an effort to pander to people who are anti-vax. We've seen a very significant strain of anti-vax politicians on the Republican side. First and foremost are U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I'd be very curious to know what his position is on this. And maybe he has something to do with talking to a legislator about doing something like this. But I think we should be encouraging our students to get vaccinated for preventable diseases. I mean, that's how we eradicated smallpox, which killed millions and millions of people throughout human history. And by the way, thank God we still have that vaccine around just in case it ever leaks out of a lab and is used as a bioweapon, because that's a potential risk. Like, vaccinating people from diseases can help prevent the spread of these diseases, which makes us all safer and healthier. It absolutely seems like an effort by some MAGA politicians here to use this particular vaccine to push an anti-vax position generally. And that's very dangerous because we're seeing this in other diseases where parents aren't getting their kids vaccinated anymore. We're seeing diseases like measles come back. And it's so unfortunate, particularly because these children, especially at a young age, may not have, like, they don't have the choice to do this on their own, and their parents are putting them at risk because of disinformation that's been put out there about vaccine efficacy.
It's interesting, Dan, that you noted smallpox, because the legislature's vote would also make it easier for parents to get an exemption from the chickenpox vaccine requirement that is currently in place for all K-6 students. The Evers administration wanted to require parents seeking a chickenpox vaccination exemption to provide proof that the child has previously been infected. The Advisory Council on Immunization Practices, who advised the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, has recommended students get vaccinated against meningitis since 2005. However, parents recently complained at a public hearing that the proposed requirements violated their liberties. Perhaps that has something to do with this recent decision. So we'll be right back after the break, continuing on the conversation with free speech and requirements in public schools. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll see you right after the break.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosure.
Can I help? Who's next?
Tom's part-time barista is now a full-time actor.
Oh, you didn't hear. He got the part on Broadway. Yeah, great for him, bad for our finicky cold brew tap.
Now he needs a star understudy to fill his open role.
And he made the best grande triple shot with oat milk caramel.
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. We instantly connect you with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, this is Joy Erickson at Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me at joey.erickson@civicmedia.us.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy this afternoon with a high of 76. East winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight. Lows dip down to about 50. Highs around 76. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Upper 70s Friday with a chance for scattered storms. Cooler Saturday with highs in the mid-70s. Storms continue. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 73.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome one, welcome all. Welcome back to Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will be driving the conversation of today's headlines. I'm William Walter with Luke Mathers, and today we are talking freedom of speech in public schools. Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line for required vaccinations in public schools? We're just talking public schools in general. And Luke, you made an interesting comparison over the break to another story that we saw come out within the past 6 months that seems eerily reminiscent of this, you know, local control aspect that we're seeing from these two stories we highlighted today.
Just within the last couple of weeks, not even months, Will. Pretty recent story over at the Journal Sentinel getting updated. I think originally published on the 17th of May and updated for the 25th of May. But talking about local control, force compliance, a lot of these different topics discussed throughout the hour here. The headline over at the Journal Sentinel is the Wisconsin teacher who spoke out about Rainbow Land ban says she's being fired. So this was the first grade teacher in the Waukesha School District that was let go. She was recommended to be fired by the district, by the superintendent of the district. And I'm sure listeners have heard many different portions of this incident that happened in Waukesha. It got picked up by late night television shows on cable networks discussing how a first grade teacher was first put on leave and then ultimately fired for speaking out against her students wanting to sing Rainbow Land. That was a step too far. And so the state superintendent of public instruction, Jill Underly, got involved in this, saying to the school board, this is not a good action. And then the response back by several different state lawmakers representing the Waukesha area said, well, Dr. Underly, it's wrong for you to even send a letter saying that this is a wrong action because this is local control, and applauded the school board for firing the first grade teacher for speaking out against the ban. And so there's many different layers here, Will, but it's strange where the local control argument gets thrown around, and you see it get played in different ways.
As you know, Luke, I love to give credit where credit is due, and that sounds suspiciously similar to a point Andrea made earlier on the show today. Andrea, this is a direct example of what you were saying, where the administration is essentially threatening the teacher's economic viability by saying either do what we say or you will be gone.
Exactly, and I think that they took the opportunity to make an example out of that teacher. It's really unfortunate because it kind of sounds like that teacher was just advocating for her students. And I think even didn't Dolly Parton comment and say, and Miley Cyrus, and they said it's not even about being gay, it's just about acceptance.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point you made. They're trying to let other teachers know, hey, this will be you if you do what she did. We are not afraid to go this far. We will fire you, particularly because it made national headlines. Now that I'm sure they were receiving angry letters, being called constantly by a certain subset of parents who, you know, vehemently disagree with protecting our students in our schools. Dan, do you have any thoughts on the situation in Waukesha?
We saw something similar happen in Florida a couple weeks ago as well, since the passing of the Don't Say Gay law. And it's part of the larger problem that we're seeing throughout the country in the treatment of educators. And it's, I think the encouraging thing to me is that if there's a silver lining that can come out of this, it's that it's bringing attention to just how out of the mainstream members of these school boards and these institutions are when things like this happen. There was that media attention helped bring attention of the citizens of the Waukesha School District to that particular issue. And I'm trying to recall back to April, are we aware of how that school board election had gone in terms of which members were elected, or because I'd be curious to know if that had an effect on the school board election in Waukesha this past April. But even if it didn't in the immediate term, I think it's bringing attention of parents and the community as a whole to these problems, because it makes our communities look bad. It's violating people's freedoms and rights. And we're losing our best educators and staff. And every time a school district loses a teacher or another educational staff like a para, they cost the district more money to replace that person too. So it's like it's costing taxpayers money in the long run. And we already have difficulty attracting and retaining educators, as I referenced before. And things like this are just meant to intimidate people out of the education profession. I think frankly, in perhaps the thinking of some of the folks that are behind treating policies like this, to try to intimidate people, parents into sending their kids to public schools. They're trying to undermine public education as a whole. And given that we're seeing a big push towards voucher schools and private schools, I think that's certainly got to be part of the game here, especially when it comes to state lawmakers who do not support public education. They want to see public education basically destroyed, and for people to send their kids to schools that want to, for lack of a better word, indoctrinate kids into having a worldview that is not based in reality.
Good point, Dan. So I actually did just look up the Waukesha School Board results from the 2023 spring election. Four candidates were on the ballot. Three of them were elected, and the one who did not was Corey Andrew Montejo, who was the incumbent. So if that answers your question, the incumbent was defeated. However, Diane Voigt, who was a former school board member, losing her seat in the 2021 spring elections, was second. So she did get re-earn her seat back onto the Waukesha School Board. So like you said, these issues are pervasive throughout the entirety of southeastern Wisconsin. This is not one district where we're seeing this. This is not one school where we're seeing this. We are seeing this. These issues are growing throughout the vast majority of districts in the state of Wisconsin. And we as parents, we as citizens, we as people in the state of Wisconsin, we need to be standing up and saying this is what we expect from our public schools. This is all of our tax dollars going to fund these schools. I like how you noted the attempt to potentially defund public schools as part of this argument. Perhaps that is the avenue they are taking, trying to point out, look, how ineffective our public schools are. Why would you bother sending your children there? They clearly can't handle all the pressure. We need to have them involved in these voucher school programs. But that's a conversation for a different day. This is Town Hall, where you are the star. You will drive the narrative of the day. We want to hear from you. We've been talking public schools, First Amendment protected speech. Where do we draw the line? Thank you for joining us today, Dan and Andrea. Please give us a call if you want to participate in the coming days, 844-967-2789. This is Town Call with William Walter and Luke Mathers. Have a great rest of your day.
Talk to y'all later. It's June Dairy Month. And though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Yes, okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cows' milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of our cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Join us in thanking our farmers by celebrating June Dairy Month. For the Civic Media Network, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Jacqueline Lee.